I wish to welcome everybody this afternoon in this inquiry again. Hope everyone who left with us here at 2 o'clock in the morning today slept well and you are again re-energized. It is unfortunate because we don't have working hours as members of parliament because we are not under the labor laws. We are not employed under labor laws. Therefore, we are not workers. We are representatives of the people. Let me welcome Mr. Koko and his legal team. His first appearance in the inquiry. I say his first appearance because I have a suspicion that we will see him again in the near future for something, maybe something else, that he must come to the committee again. It's just a suspicion of my own. It's not a decision of a committee. It's not something that the committee have discussed. It's just my own suspicion. Members, let us again prepare ourselves possibly for a long day again. Tomorrow Gucci is something that does not exist. It's something that we meet on the way. We don't say it's tomorrow. We say it's working hours. Maybe we will work until late. Maybe we will work until late afternoon or in the morning. Depends on us as we are working. But I just want to say to members before we start, after every 2 hours, we will take a break. Yeah, it's a new approach for today. We will have a break after every 2 hours, a 10-minute break or 5-minute break. It will depend how strong we are. Welcome, everybody. Today we are meeting on this inquiry. Mr. Matela Koko, he is already here with his legal team. As usual, we're not speaking to the legal team. We're not expecting the legal team to interact with us. We will interact with Mr. Koko. You'll have your own way of interacting with him as his legal representative. I am told that you are given a copy of an oath. It's in front of you. Therefore, I will read now the oath. After that, you will sign, and one of the staff members will come and take it. I will now read the oath. In accordance with Section 16 of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act 2004, as a witness to this oversight inquiry, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily. I want to emphasize on those two words, fully and satisfactory, all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages, you are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath before a house or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside parliament. except in a criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Please be aware that in terms of Section 17(2) of Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act, a person who willfully vanishes a house or committee with information or makes a statement before it which is false or misleading commits an offence and is liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years. You are required to take an oath that you are about to give evidence that is truthful. I am now going to give over to you to swear or to take the oath.
I swear that the evidence I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God.
Thank you. Then you will sign the oath that is in front of you. After you have done that, I will give you 20 minutes of presenting your paper to the committee. And then after you have done that, you'll take your time. It depends on you that you'll take the whole 20 minutes or you'll take less than 20 minutes. After that, the evidence leader will take over and lead us with questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, members. Honorable Ranto, I've observed, I've watched on TV, so as you said, it's my first time, so I'm not familiar with what's happening here. I'm advised by my counsel, based on the Powers and Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act 4 of 2004, in relation to Chapter 15 of it, to request that I be appraised on your role, what to expect from the members, and what to expect from the Advocate Vanara.
What you are expected to do now is to give us the presentation that you have in front of us. The documents that you have sent to us, you present them, you summarize them. You don't go line by line, you summarize them for us. Then Advocate Vanara will lead the questions based on the evidence that you have given us or on the presentation that you have given us and other information that he has collected. Same applies to us. We will then, after him, ask questions to you, directly to you, on the evidence that you have given us and the supplementary information that we have received about any activities regarding your work in ESCOM. Is that maybe more clearer to you?
Thank you, Honorable Ranto. My name is Machela Moses Koko. I work for ESCOM. I'm a group executive for generations in ESCOM. I have been working for ESCOM for 23 years. My association with ESCOM is over 31 years. ESCOM took me to high school, took me to university, and I've only worked for ESCOM. For those who know me, I always say my blood is ESCOM blue. I have been appointed as executive in November 2014. I was appointed by Tshidiso Matona. And the new board of Excom started in December. And 3 months into my new role as an executive, on the 11th of March 2015, in my first ever contact with the board, I was served with a suspension. I was in suspension for 4 months, and I came back in the office on the 20th of July. The letter that I was given when I was suspended, and I want to read it, just extrapolate it. It was given to me on the 11th of March. It says, I refer to the meeting of today, 11 March 2015, wherein we discussed the company's concern regarding the serious state of company and the board resolution to conduct an independent inquiry into the possibility that the power delivery may be compromised by either intentional or negligent conduct. In other words, I was suspended because the board suspected that I and my colleagues were literally sabotaging the country because of load shedding. I came back on the 20th of July. Mr. Molefe was now the acting chief executive. And load shedding was at its worst, costing the country 76 rands per kilowatt hour, averaged at 400 million rands a day. And when I came back on July 20th, 2015, on the 8th of August, load shedding stopped. It is the same August, and the 8th of August, 2015, is a momentous year for many who do not know and will come to realize, because when load shedding stopped, Glencoe had stopped supplying us with coal. And it is at that time when Mr. Molefe met Minister Ramatlodi to deal with the impact of Eskom not receiving coal in the middle of load shedding that is costing the country 76 rands per kilowatt hour, or the equivalent of 400 million rands a day. When I was suspended by the board because the generation performance is not where it's supposed to be, I asked the board, I'm only 3 months in this job. The executives that have been managing generation are not in this meeting and are not being suspended. Mr. Governor managed generation for 7 years, and we've seen it deteriorate. Mr. Ntsokolo came in, and we started load shedding. But I don't see them being suspended. I told the board that the reason that you are giving me, it's not what I am being suspended for, because I knew why I was being suspended. I was suspended because I refused to take an unlawful instructions from the chairman of the time, Mr. Zolatsotsi, because he had committed Eskom to pay Sumitomo 69 million rands, which he clearly knew that he's not an executive chairman. He's a non-executive chairman and has no role to play in committing Eskom to a supplier without order to the tune of 69 billion rands. Mr. Matuna called me a week before the suspension. He said to me, "Mr. Koko, we are in trouble because you have suspended Zola to this man, Mr. Malisela Sekasimbe. And I have clear instructions from Mr. Tsotsi to unsuspend him or both of us will be suspended." I said to Mr. Matuna, "You know why I suspended Mr. Sekasimbe? I kept you in the loop. I cannot do it. I cannot unsuspend him." And that was the real reason why Mr. Matuna and I were suspended. 2 months later, in my first meeting with the board after suspension, I met Ms. Clay, Mr. Koza, and Ms. Daniels. I met them in a hotel in Midrand, and they offered me a separation package. They offered me 4.9 billion rands to walk away, or else I face an investigation and run the risk of being dismissed. I refused. The letter of the package that I referred to, you'll find it in the bundle. The committee called me here to talk about three things: the sale of Genko, the prepayment, and corporate governance. In your bundle, in page 34, there's a letter from Genko, which, if you fail to read anything and everything, it tells the story of Genko. Genko, or Optima Mine, supplied coal to Eskom. The arrangement between Eskom and Optima was recorded in an agreement that was signed in 1983 with an effective date of 1969. It was a cost-plus arrangement, which means that Eskom has invested capital for the mine. In other words, it was an Eskom mine. The mine belongs to Eskom. Eskom paid for the mining and infrastructure assets from 1983. On the 7th of January, Eskom granted Optimum, then Transnational Coal, a company of Genko, Eskom granted them permission to export 6.5 million tons of coal. Initially, it was a dedicated mine. And Eskom did that deliberately. The political economy at the time was that if we allow Genko to export, Eskom will benefit on economies of scale and the rand per ton will come down. In 1993, the contract was converted from a fixed cost, from a cost plus contract to a fixed cost contract. And Optimum invested additional funds to expand the mine. In 1986-1987, the Korenfontein resources that was dedicated to Eskom was released to Optimum for export. Genko changed hands and became Bexa. In 2011, the base price between Eskom and Genko and Bexa was renegotiated to 115 rands per ton. In 2012, after the price was renegotiated in 2011, in 2012, Shanduka and Genko took control of Optima Mine after acquiring Optima Holdings. Immediately thereafter, Genko started querying the price and argued hardship conditions. They create the impression created was that they bought, they took control of the mine, unaware of the impact of Optimum Mine on Optimum Holdings. So from day one, they started demanding that Eskom change the coal supply agreement and increase the price. I give this background so that people understand that we're talking about originally an Eskom mine, the mine that Eskom paid for, the mine that Eskom facilitated in partnership. Right up until 2011, when Baxter renegotiated the prices for Eskom for 250 rands, and ultimately until Shanduka and Glencore took control of it. In March 2012, Glencore took over. On the 3rd of July 2013, Glencore issued hardship notice to Eskom. On the 28th of February, Glencore instituted arbitration proceedings. On the 23rd of May 2014, the arbitration gave rise to a cooperation agreement. This cooperation agreement was mentioned many a times in this forum, in this meeting. The cooperation agreement suspended the penalty. Chair, I draw your attention on the letter of the 14, in page 34, and I want to quote from it because it's quite instructive. And it's got a chapter called Export Benefit Sharing. It says, OCM understands that there is a perception in Eskom that the shareholders of Optimum reaped the benefits of high export prices in the past. But now the export price is low. It is not willing to bear the pain and is looking to transfer the risk to Eskom. Remember during the crisis, during the commodity crisis in 2008, Baxter was the owner. Baxter never complained because they understood the arrangement. They were by design. Now, the response from Glencore in 2014 is this. We understand the Eskom sensitivity in this regard. And in an attempt to address this concern, OCM is willing to introduce the agreement, a mechanism which will allow Eskom for the first 4 years of the agreement from 2015 to 2018 to share in the benefit of the export price. What Glencore is saying here is acknowledging the arrangement that Eskom has made that will make Optimum Mine a dual mine. It will export. The benefit of the export will subsidize Eskom. And by volume, that's how the price comes down. It acknowledges the sensitivity that Eskom has, that Eskom has not benefited when the prices were high. Now that the price is low, Glencore and Shanduka come to Eskom and say, the prices are low. And yes, you've not benefited when the prices were up. But we are in hardship and therefore we need you to change the condition of the agreement. The letter of November 13 is quite important, Chair, because in the version of Glencore, in the version of Glencore, in 2014, the forecast of the claim penalties was 638 million rands. So in Glencore's versions, the claims were there, and they valued them in 2014 as 638 million rands. So it's not a fabrication, it's not fictitious. On the 18th of May, Ivan met Brian. I was not in that meeting. But if you read the documents, it was not a pleasant meeting. I think Brian came here and said to this committee, Ivan came and put a gun over my head. And I think Brian said to this committee, I told him, shoot. If you did. On the 22nd of May, on page 36, Glencoe sent a note to ESCOM that they will, we face, Optimum is faced with liquidation. On the 30th of June, 2015, Glencoe sent a letter to ESCOM and says, we're going to increase the price because we're in hardship from 150 rands per ton to 300 rands per ton up until 2018 and 570 rands per ton from 2018 to 2023. ESCOM rejected that for the same reasons I've mentioned. In page 39, you'll find an ESCOM letter terminating the cooperation agreement. Brian testified here that the cooperation agreement was terminated on the 22nd of May because there's a legal term they use, the debts will no longer be valid. And in that letter, and in July 31st, the board of Optimum took a decision to put Optimum Mine in business rescue. Now, I give members this history because up until then, Mr. Koko was not in ESCOM. Up until then, Mr. Koko was on suspension by Zola Tsotsi for allegedly sabotaging the country by causing load shedding, when the real reasons was different. On the 16th of July, Mr. Govender authorized, Mr. Teva Govender authorized a letter of demand to Optimum. And in that letter of demand, you will find for the first time the 2.8 billion rands claim that was sent by CDH letter. On the 4th of August, Optimum Mine was officially in business rescue. And the call to ESCOM stopped. You will find in the bundle a letter from CDH to Optimum after a meeting with Brian and Optimum, because on around the 3rd I received a call from Clinton of Optimum, and he says, you know,
excuse me, Chair, sorry to interrupt, but the number of first names are being used. Could we ask the witness to give the name and the surname, Ivan, other names? It might help us. My apologies. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, in case there's two Brians in ESCOM, there's Brian Adamus and Brian Molefe. So we might be confused with the names.
Honorable Ranto, I apologize. The Brian I refer to is Brian Molefe. And the Clinton I refer to is Clinton Evron. Clinton Evron calls me on around 3rd of September. He says, you've not been receiving call for the month of August. You just stopped load shedding. We don't know for how long. But we can't carry on like this. And there's no meaningful conversation happening between us. I said, I agree with you. I will facilitate a meeting between Mr. Molefe and you. And indeed, they've met on the 3rd and call to ESCOM resumed on the 4th. On the 28th of October, I met with the business rescue practitioners. We discussed the options, but you will remember in the letter of September that I referred to, Optima made it clear that in that letter they said Optima Mine requires 100 million rands every month to run the business. The prospects of a rescue are not there unless you increase the price. And then the penalties was not an issue, but increase the price. When we met the business practitioners on the 28th of October and we discussed the options, they said to me, and they summarized the discussions we had on the 29th, the summary of which is in your budget. And they said Optimum requires 120 million rands every month. And the only way to rescue it is for ESCOM to pay us more. Which you will see in that letter different options. One of those options was for ESCOM to take over the mine. That option did not grow legs, but it is in that meeting that they told me, it's in that letter of the 29th of October that they told me that they are negotiating with Okbay. On the 24th of November, we had a meeting with them. And in that meeting, they introduced Okbay Tiketa people. In the meeting, I was with Susan Daniels, and Ms. Ayanda Nteta took the notes. Ms. Daniels testified in this meeting that she was basically a clerk in that meeting. Ms. Daniels was not a clerk in that meeting. Ms. Daniels was in her previous role a coal contract specialist. And she was in that meeting as a coal contract specialist. You will see the minutes of the 24th of November are also in your pack. It is in that meeting when the business rescue practitioner put it to me that the business will be rescued at optimum level. And I said to them, in your vision that you've communicated many a times, Optimum cannot be rescued. Optimum mine cannot be rescued unless ESCOM is going to change the price. But ESCOM is not going to change the price. And that was communicated, I think, if you go into my submission in page 73, on the 18th of May to Ivan Lesenberg. Now, I'm going to this deliberately because...
Mr. Cox, could you please, when you indicate the month and the date, you indicate the year. Remember, we've got critical years where things were happening. So don't forget the year. Always mention the year when you mention the day and the month.
Once again, I apologize. My power to that. Uh, on paragraph 73, in the meeting with the CEO of with Ivan Glazenberg, Eskom's stance was simply that it was, despite running short of generation capacity, not going to succumb to Glencore's strong arm tactic, but fully expect Optimum to comply with the Hendrina contract up until 2018 at 150 rands per ton, and was not going to waive penalty claims, but will pursue arbitration. The letter of claim that was authorized by Mr. Govender, which you will find in page 42. And I want to quote from it. It says, further, in the event that Optimum disputes the claim amount, Optimum must provide us with names it preferred for an arbitrator. Within 5 business working days of the noting of the dispute, should we fail to reach agreement on a particular arbitrator within 7 business days from the date of exchange of the names of the arbitrator, a request shall be made to the president of the Law Society of the Northern Province to nominate an arbitrator. This means that Eskom was determined and resolved to stick to the agreement and insisted that in the event that Optimum was not happy with the 2.1 billion rands, we go for arbitration. You will find in my submission that Clinton Evram said to me, Mr. Koko, I think your claim is not 2 billion rands. You'll be lucky if you get it 800 million rands. The business practitioner says, Mr. Koko, we think you'll get away with 700 million rands. The claim was settled at 577 million rands, which I think, and I thought is in the ballpark. Ms. Daniels testified how we ended up with a billion rands error and testified that the person that did the calculations ended up working for Glencore. I cannot comment on that. She had the deliberations from the board to deal with the claims. On the 1st of December, Glencore came to see me and the business rescue practitioners, and they said to me, we are going to take Optimum out of business rescue. I said, that's great, that's what we're looking for. That's what we've been hustling for. And they said, we will stick to the contract until 2018. I said, it's wonderful. Excellent. They left, and I said, give me something in writing, and we'll proceed on that basis. What I received in writing was a letter from Bergsman actually. I asked them to give me in writing that they will take Optimum out of business rescue. What I received was a letter, which is in your bundle, from Bergsman attorneys representing the business rescue practitioners. And all what that letter said, and it's in your bundle, is that we only guarantee you coal for Hendrina until the 31st. Of January 2016. Now, that's a complete turnaround from what I was told around the same time. On the 4th of December, the business rescue practitioners issued a note to the stakeholders. Again, that note is in your bundle. That note on the 4th said the same thing. We guarantee you coal until the 31st of January 2016. At that point in time, Korenfontein's contract was expiring. Arnold's contract for 40 years expired. Not because they were forced to expire, but it was a 40-year contract that was meant to expire. And at the time of expiry, we looked at the options of extending it. The price was 1,135, and the new price was over 1,300. It did not make sense for us to do that. And the reason it did not make sense for us is because the average price of the average cost increases for Eskom since 2008 was 18%. This was a cost plus mine that should be performing. And for whatever reason, and they argue because Eskom did not invest capital in the past and therefore they are constrained, that may be a good reason. But today, the cost of coal from Arnold mine is 1,135. The average of cost of coal at Eskom was around 400. If we proceeded with it, the national, the regulator would not allow us to recover the price. Because the regulator at that point was pushing back on the costs. So we had a problem. We don't have coal for Arnold. The optimal mine is, the Korenfontein mine is coal is, the contract is expiring. There's no deal at Hendrina. So between myself, Brian, and Ms. Daniels, we decided, let's write to DMR. DMR was already seized with this matter because already when they stopped the license, we went to them and said, you can't do that. And we said to them, we know you are already in contact with the business risk of practitioners, with Lenco. Do whatever you can. And the letter that I wrote is in your pack. And the reply is also in your pack with the suggestion that we do a prepayment for 12 months. Anosh and I put a submission to the board with the condition that the Hendrina mine must be out of business rescue.
Sorry, Mr. Koko. Honorable Mgame Gabash.
Thank you, Chair. We request that whenever the witness refers us to an attachment, and he also mentioned the title, they are title MMK 1 to about 37 attachments, so it will be easy for us to go through the attachment quickly when you mentioned the title name of the, or the number of the attachment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Honorable Mgagagawash. I think you followed that, Mr. Koko. You understand what she said.
So that sets the scene for the prepayment for the 1.68 in particular. I need to go back to deal with the prepayment, in particular the 600 million one. And for that, I want to refer you to an attachment. MK25, it's in page 127. This is the mandate that was authorized in 2008, page 127. What you have in page 127 is a note that served at the board for the 2008 mandate.
Mr. Koko, Your submission, I see that you are quoting the number of the pages, the number of the pages.
On the bundle, 127. On the bundle. On the bundle. Front page of that bundle, it's a scope that the National Treasury was asked. It says, the Treasury Department was requested to review the financial aspect of the following, amongst others. A request for a mandate to negotiate and conclude contracts of the short-term medium for the supply and delivery of coal to various ESCOM power stations to meet the requirements during 2010 and 2018. Approval to make advance payments to the suppliers to the value of 500 million rands to enable them to increase their plant capacity, thereby enabling them to provide ESCOM with the required quantities. Approval to make advance payment to the suppliers for the value of 200 million rands for the refurbishment of certain wash plants. And the total for that submission is 700 million rands. Now, if you go to the end, to the conclusion, the last paragraph is quite interesting. It says, we cannot comment on the reasonableness or the validity of the proposed advancement, and would like to draw your attention to our concern regarding significant advance payments being made to the suppliers with no performance guarantees from them to limit ESCOM exposure to financial losses. This talks to the security of it. That is why in both mandates of April 11, 2016 and the December one, you will find that guarantees are highlighted, very important, and the competent person within ESCOM is delegated to make sure that that happens. And that competent person is CFO, in particular, the National Treasury. I want to finish by talking about trillion. I've been called a thief by people I trusted, by people I still trust. I've been called a thief by Suzanne Daniels, who I think is extremely competent lawyer. And he's been in my office for, as far as I can remember. And I will not call her names, but what I want to do is to refer you to MM case 35. Page 209. You will see that it's a memo addressed to me as an interim group chief executive. The originator is the chief procurement officer. And it is supported by the project manager, Chris Governor, and it is signed by Ms. Daniels. And what they were asking me, Ms. Daniels, Mr. Mabilani, and Mr. Chris Governor, is that in line with McKinsey and Company to date, the external review by Oliver Wyman and the Board Tender Committee approval on the 8th of February, a final settlement of 460 million in due to McKinsey must be paid. recommendation to settle the outstanding amount payment to McKinsey and the BEE partner for $460 million. Now, what the committee will have to deal with is Ms. Daniels coming here and saying Mr. Koko is a thief because of the trillion transaction. And Mr. Koko puts before you a recommendation supported by Ms. Daniels to pay 460 million rands to McKinsey. That's what this committee has to deal with. I need to draw you to my submission. Goodson, in her whistleblowing statement that he also presented here, he says it was very obvious that Salim Issa and Mr. Koko are in contact with each other. That's true. She also said she was told to go and meet Mr. Koko and get Mr. Koko to pay 30 million rands directly to Trillion. And in her own version, this is what she says. When we spoke about TMC, about TMC's direct invoicing to Eskom, as I had been instructed to do. Now, I don't know who instructed him. Machela responded that he understood the TMC request to invoice directly, but could not support it. Simply put, there was no contract in place between Eskom and Trillion. If you read this and the memorandum that Ms. Daniel sent me, you will understand why I said no to it. Why am I called a thief? It reminds me of an experience of a certain Bulelani Ngcuka who was called an apartheid spy, and everybody believed him. Everybody believed at the time that Bulelani Ngcuka was a spy, until we had the benefit of a Hefa commission. And the people who were there, who made those allegations under cross-examination, could not stand. And thanks God, today we know that Bulelani Ngcuka was not a spy. This is a similar experience, that people abuse these forums. Not under cross-examinations, and come call people thieves. I want to go to Ms. Klein. Ms. Klein made statement which Mr. Vanara put back to the witness that Mr. Koko, you are a Hitler. I have put in my submissions the people that Ms. Klein had in mind when you said Mr. Koko can't deal with people. I have listed Saleha, a very good friend of mine, very competent executives, that regrettably South Africa lost. He was suspended by Mr. Koko on the basis of a letter that I have received, that the group chief executive at the time, Mr. Matuna, received from the chairman of the Exco Procurement Committee. I think it's proper to just make a reference to for the committee to go to see that letter. It's in page 187 of the budget. Now remember the version here put forward is that Mr. Lahar is responsible for the IT contract. IT contract has been on tender. There are three shortlisted companies. He's a very critical individual. This contract is not going the right way, and the right way is supposed to be T-Systems. Mr. Laha is a competent person, and he's applying his mind, and T-Systems is losing. Therefore, tackle him, get him out, and do whatever you want to do. That's a narrative that's been. But I want to read this letter. I won't read all of it. You will see it's signed on page 188 by Mr. Ntsokolo, chairman of Exco Ops. Exco Ops stands for Exco Procurement Committee. He says to the chief executive, I write this letter to you in my capacity as the chairman of Exco Ops. The Exco Procurement Committee meeting of the 22nd of October. At the meeting of the 22nd of October, the Chief Information Officer attended the meeting with a team to present an item. It was about primary. I'm just going to get to the point. It emerged during the discussion that ESCOM procurement processes had not been adhered to in sourcing goods and services. The CIO requested the committee to overlook his failures to adhere to the processes and instead grant him condonations for the failure to adhere to the process. This matter is still pending. In paragraph 2, they list the other instances where the CIO failed to observe the ESCOM procurement processes. The group executive gave it to me. I took guidance from IR. We suspended him pending an investigation and disciplinary hearing. Unfortunately, I was suspended, and when I came back, he was gone. In fact, he sent me an email when he was suspended. He said, Mr. Koko, I know we had a good relationship. I understand what is happening. Can we have coffee? Because I'm on the way out. I'm leaving for London. But I never got time to see him, and I hope I'll still see him. There's an issue of Mr. Majola, and Mr. Majola is a very competent ESCOM executive. I have no problem with him. We had an issue with him. We went through a disciplinary hearing, chaired by an external person, and it was done and dusted. What Ms. Kane has not told you is that he breached his fiduciary duties. That's what he didn't tell. He called me on the 14th of January to his house, to her house. I got to her house. I met her with her husband. And this is what he said to me. I retired from AFSA. I invested all my monies in my husband's company with the intention of getting contract in ESCOM. But my husband is not getting contract with ESCOM because his competition is getting contracts unlawfully. Can you sort this out? I did not expect the discussions to arise. She's a board member. She's got interests. She should never have such a conversation with me. I said to her, I will sort it out. I went back to work. I called the chief audit officer. I called the project team. And then I called the husband. And I think that's what broke my relationship with her. Because she did not expect me to be this transparent and to include the chief audit officer in the discussions that we had. The meeting we had with her was on the 14th of January. The meetings I had with the chief audit officer and the project team and the husband of Ms. Lane was on the 16th of January 2017. There is an ESCOM report which is not part of this bundle, and we can supplement the bundle that deals with the investigations that arose afterwards.
We would like to have that additional attachment. How soon can we get that you have just referred to?
Yes. The recordings on the 2nd of March 2017 was a very painful one for me. I listened to them. That's the meeting that I was expected to be suspended. That's the meeting where Ms. Lane said, and I quote, he's gone too far. And the reason I've gone too far, Honorable Chair, and I don't know what we've become as a country, I think we are desensitized when it suits us. I have bank accounts from suppliers who says to me, Mr. Koko, we are paying ESCOM executives here there. They give it to me. So I have them in my hands. I have no other option but to act. I take them, I give them to ESCOM forensics. But while the forensics carries on, I can't leave those executives in their jobs. I don't need the board's authority to move them. I'm delegated. So I move them. But I report to them. I report to the board that I've moved these people. And that gives rise to the meeting of the 2nd of March. That he's gone too far because he's moved people that have received kickbacks from suppliers. I think we've been desensitized. I can't believe we sit and discuss that as a nation, as a country. I'm aggrieved, I'm hurt that we end up discussing why executives that have received kickbacks are on suspension, or not on suspension, have been moved. Chair, I do confirm to you now that both executives, one has resigned and one is on suspension, with a prima facie case against them, with the police investigating it.
The committee the members would like to get the names.
Franz Takudi has resigned. Mr. Abraham Masango is currently on suspension. Honorable Chair, I want to stop here.
Thank you very much. Although it's not 2 hours, I would like us to take a break for 15 minutes. But for members, I request that we remain just for 5 minutes. We have to adopt our amendment program for this year. Can we then take a break? We should be back by 25 past 2. Thank you very much.
I really didn't trust this thing.